Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Before we begin today's shiur, we would like to make mention to all of the listeners that in the course of this Maseches, we will be, Amir Tzashem, using a book of illustrations that accompany many, many sugyas. The name of the Sefer is Sichas Chulin, authored by Amitai Ben David. We're mentioning it now so as to give everybody sufficient lead time to order from your local bookstore or book supplier this very important piece of work. It is very rich with many illustrations that accompany everything you'll need as far as illustrations in this Maseches. As we turn to the Daf Hey, approximately a quarter of the way from the top, you will notice a triangle that appears on the latter part of the line. And in the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, you'll also notice a little triangle with a 1 in it. In the outside margin, under our Mivneh heading, which is an attempt to explain the structural points of each new sugya as new symbols appear, we have written, where the triangle is featured in the outside margin, two nisyonos, two attempts, lahavi siwa, to bring support, mimakoros, from sources, l'Rav Onan, to Rav Onan's teaching. Now, Rav Onan had taught, and we saw this in our previous shiur, that a Yisrael Mumar Lavudis Kechavim, a Jew who sins knowingly in the area of idolatry, who is guilty of idolatry, Mutter Lecho Mishchitaso. It is Mutter to eat from that which he slaughtered, and this was learned from Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, who was a pious individual, who ate from the food prepared by Achav, a king who was a known idol worshipper. At this point, the Gemara wants to bring a support to this, to Rav Onan's teaching, from sources. So the Gemara says, Lemo Mesayale, can we say that the following supports Rav Onan's teaching? The Pasuk says, V'orvim mevim loy lechem ubosar vaboker v'lechem ubosar bo'erev. The Orvim are a type of bird brought to Eliyahu HaNavi, brought to him bread and meat in the morning and in the afternoon. So we see that the food brought from Achav's kitchen was acceptable. The Omer of Yehuda Marav, Mibei Tabchi D'Achav. Rav Yehuda points out that the meat brought to him was from the slaughtering sites of Achav. The Gemara rejects this as being a source of heter, an allowance across the boards. Alpi Hadibor Shaini. This was the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, making an allowance. And there are places in the Torah where things that ordinarily would not be allowed, but because of some type of momentary consideration, an allowance is made, of course, from an allowance provided by the Almighty Himself. But as far as making a general principle out of this pasuk, that cannot be done. You'll notice that we have a bracketed section. After the bracketed section, the length of the bracketed section is indicated by a bracket length indicator, which is characterized by a vertical descending dash dotted line, which you'll notice in this case the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. At the end of this particular line, you'll notice the brackets closes and another triangle appears, Lemo Mesayale. Within the brackets, the Gemara will be dealing with the word Urvim that was in the Pasuk. And within this bracketed section, you'll notice there are two bow tie shapes, and these are explained under our Mivneh heading in the outside margin. These will be two Nisyonis Lidchois Ravina Shamar Urvim Mamish. In this discussion, the word Urvim will be explained by Ravina, as we explained already, a reference to birds. Urvim is a name of a specific variety of bird, and that's what Ravina says, that these are actual birds that brought the food to him. As we said in the brackets, there'll be two attempts to suggest a different translation of the word Urvim. However, after the brackets, there is another attempt to support Rav Onan. All that having been said, let us now turn to the bracketed section. My Urvim. What is meant by Urvim in the pasuk that we just read, a few lines up where it said Urvim mivim lo lechem ubasar baboker? Omar Ravina, Urvim mamash, literally birds. Omar le Rav Ado bar Minyumi, the Dilma tre gavri dehavi shmayu Urvim. Rav Ado suggests maybe it's a reference to two men, each of whom's name was Orev. So two people with the name Orev can be called Urvim in the plural. Mi lo ksiv, do we not have a pasuk? In fact, in Sefer Shoftim, where the name appear, that a person's name Orev appears, and it says there, Vayargu es Orev b'tsur, Orev v'es ze'ev v'chulei. Now in that pasuk, Orev was the name of a person. So maybe in the pasuk that we opened up with in the Lema Mesayale above, where it said the Urvim were bringing food, it's a reference to two people and nothing to do with birds. Hence a question on Ravino's explanation. Omar Le, so he says back, Ravino in all probability answers, Isramoi Milso, the Travayu Havashmayu Urvim? Could it be? Could it happen that you have two people with the same unusual name as Orev? Very unlikely. So it's more likely to say the bird pshat. Question. The Dilmo Al Shem Mekomon. Maybe the word Urvim is a reference to a place that was called Orev. Milo Ksiv. Do we not have a pasuk in which another? In another pasuk, the word na'ara will appear, and the word na'ara has a very common translation as being a youth. However, in this particular pasuk, the word na'ara takes on a much less common explanation as a reference to a place, so that we have situations where there's what appears to be a word that appears to have a common meaning, but can have a different connotation, or in this particular case, a reference to a place, as opposed to what you otherwise would have thought, as the Gemara goes on to demonstrate. We'll read that second bow tie again. The Dilmo Ashem Mekoman. Maybe the word Orev in the Pasuk Urvim is a reference to a place from where the people that brought the food came from, as opposed to Ravino's pshat, birds. Milo Ksiv, do we not have a Pasuk that says, V'aram Yotsu Gedudim, V'yishbu Me'eretz Yisrael Naro Ketana? The Pasuk says that Aram, which is the name of an empire, went forth in military form in battle, and they captured from the Jews a Na'ara Ketana, the Kashilon, and the expression Na'ara Ketana presents a difficulty to us. Kori lo Na'ara, on the one hand you refer to her as Na'ara. Na'ara indicates a girl above the age of 12. The Kori lo Ketana, and in the same breath you call her Ketana, which is below the age of 12. The terms are mutually exclusive. The Omar Rapidos, and Rapidos resolves this pasuk by saying Ketana demin na'uran. The individual that was captured in that battle was a minor. She was under 12, that came from a place called Na'uran. and hence the word Nara doesn't take on the common translation as youth, but rather it's a name of a place. Hence, when the pasuk that we opened up with Va'orvim Mevi'im Lobasar, maybe it means people that came from a place called Orev. The Gemara says, Im Kain, if that were the understanding of the word, or Vayim Miboyale, it should have used the word Orvayim, meaning people that come from Orev. And that word would have been used, certainly, as Rashi points out, so as not to make the mistake that it's a reference to birds. So since it did not use the word Orvayim, I realize that it's not referring to a place or people that come from that place, but rather it really means, like Ravina said, birds. This is the closing of the bracketed section. Now the Gemara goes back to try to support Rav Onan's rule. Rav Onan's rule, meaning Shkitas Yisrael Mumer L'Avodei Kohavim, is kosher. Leimo Mesayale. We have an attempt to support Rav Onan, who was an Amora, from the following Tanaic source. The Tanaic sources in our Gemara marking system are in frames, so as to distinguish them, set them apart from the rest of the Gemara text. The source says, Hakol Shechtim, Vafilu Kusi, Vafilu Orel, Vafilu Yisrael Mumar. We should point out, before we go any further, that this Leimo Mesayale, Leimo is a question. Let us say that this is a support, and the question lasts a number of lines. This is indicated by the long question marking. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara where a shin is encircled with a descending vertical line, indicating that all of these lines are trying to develop the point that we have a possible support to Rav Onan. After this, there will be a rejection. The support is coming from, or the attempted support is coming from this source, in which the source says that everyone can shecht, and we're including a Kusi Orel and a Yisrael Mumar. Hai Orel Hechidami. The Orel, the uncircumcised individual that's featured in this source, what are the circumstances behind his case? E Lemo Shemesu Echov Machmas Milo. If one were to think that this is a person whose brothers had died as a result of their being circumcised, their bris milah, and he now is, let's say, the third child, and we are not going to circumcise him because of this family precedent where two brothers of his had already died, so he is not someone that needs to be included in a special way to allow his Shechita. Hi, Yisrael Ma'al Yehu. He's a totally kosher, acceptable individual, so that it's obvious that he would be allowed to shecht. His lack of circumcising is a function of something beyond his control. Ella, so and therefore there's no need to specify him as even he is allowed to shecht. That's obvious. Ella, Pshita, Mumar, La'arlis. We're talking about someone who is a sinner with regard to circumcision, who willingly does not want to circumcise himself. So the source would be teaching that someone like that, that is a mumar to that particular offense, his shechita nonetheless is acceptable. Continuing in the analysis, Emo Seifa. If we state the Seifa of this source, it said, Vafilu Yisrael Mumar. That was the last character that was mentioned in this particular source. Even a sinner. Hechidami, who is this sinner? Imumar Ludavar Echod, if he is a sinner with regard to one particular type of sin. So Hainu Mumar L'Arlus, that would have already been included in the example of an Orel. He was, and we're saying that a person who's a sinner with regard to the mitzvah of Mila, his shechita is nevertheless acceptable. Why do you have to add Afilu Yisrael Mumar when it in effect would be the same thing? Elo Lav Mumar Lavodis Kechavim Uchid Rabbanan. So rather, this last phrase, even Yisrael Mumar, it's a reference to someone who is a sinner with regard to idolatry. And idolatry is not a run-in-the-mill mitzvah or sin, so to speak. Therefore, it deserves special reference. And we see from here that even someone who is a sinner with regard to idolatry, his shechita is acceptable. And that would support Rav Onan's teaching. The Gemara rejects this. Loi. Le'olam emaloch mumar lavez chavim lo. I will tell you, in general, a person who is a sinner with regard to idolatry, his shechita will not be acceptable. Before we go any further, we want to point out some of the structural features in this line. We see the inverted house form. This we spoke about in our previous shiur, where we had seen a house form, and you can spot it by noticing the little arrow that we've provided to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Over here we have an arrow which with an indicator that this is relevant to Dalet Amud Beis. And if you notice back on Dalet Amud Beis, toward the upper half of the page, there is an arrow also to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. At that point, the Gemara had reached a certain conclusion regarding a mumar, and in that case we were speaking about a mumar la'osa davar, someone who is a sinner with regard to matters of kashrus of meat, with regard to the eating of nevelos. He willingly eats nevelos. There the Gemara said that a mumar la'osa davar, no, but a mumar la'avodas kochavim would be acceptable by way of shechita. Here, the Gemara is going to reach the opposite, an opposite conclusion. And that's why we have the house form inverted. And that's what the Gemara is saying now. It's saying that, in general, I will tell you that a mumar levedis kochavim is not acceptable. And the Gemara goes on to say why. The Omar Mar, it has been taught, chamura levedis kochavim, the issue of idolatry is so severe, so significant, shekol ha-kofer ba, anyone who denies idolatry, kemoide b'chol ha-Torah kula. It's as if he is conceding, accepting the rest of the Torah. There is a possibility that this line could be understood in a euphemistic way, and that is euphemistic, meaning that it really wanted to say kol ha-moide b'avodah zarah, but it's not a pleasant thing to make reference to someone who accepts idolatry. Hence, it's taught in the opposite. But if you accept that pshat, it would come out that the line is saying that anyone who practices idolatry, it's as if he denies all of the Torah. And that explanation would make this point even more simple to understand, that anyone who practices idolatry, we certainly cannot accept his shechita, because he is in effect denying all of the Torah. So what is the Yisrael Mumar that is, yes, acceptable? Ela Mumar la'oisa davar. He is the one his shechita is being included here. Mumar la'oisa davar is someone who will willingly eat nevelos, meaning meat that's not shechted. U'chidarava, and based on Rava's teaching, you'll notice we have a little arrow pointing to Dalid Amud Aleph. This arrow, a parallel arrow, if you can scroll back to Dalid Amud Aleph, also to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, there you'll see it's pointing at the lower part of the page to Rava's name, where Rava had said that a Yisrael Mumar, a Jewish individual who sins with regard to eating improperly slaughtered meat, or unslaughtered meat, all you have to do is you check the knife to make sure it's notch-free, that it's smooth. You can give it, the knife, to such an individual, someone who's a sinner with regard to nevelos, and we will allow him to shecht, because of the concept of a person lo shavik heter v'ochli sur. If a person has the chance to do something properly, he won't pass up on it just to do it improperly. So the expression here, b'afili yisrael mumar, is coming to include a mumar le'oisa davar, mumar with regard to that very case that we're dealing with. The very case we're dealing with is shechita. He's a sinner with regard to the matter of eating kosher. And nevertheless, if you give him a checked knife, his shechita will be acceptable. But to suggest that we have a support to Rav Onan from this source, from the Tanaic source that accompanied the second triangle, that we are not going to say. Meisvei, we have a Tanaic source. We are going to present a question. This is a long question. It's a question that takes us till the bottom of the page to finally see what the point of the question is. The length of this question is indicated by the long question marking, the kuf. Kuf is a kushya. The kuf is encircled, and it's accompanied by a descending vertical dashed line till the bottom line. All of this forms the question. Eventually, we will end up with a question on Rav Onan's teaching. So the Gemara asks a question starting from a Tanaic source. The Tanaic source opens up with a pasuk. The pasuk is quoted in the source itself in one word. Rashi, however, gives a more complete version of the pasuk where it says, "Odom ki yakriv mikem korban." So the source says, "Mikem, velo kulchem." Mikem is a limiting expression or an exclusionary expression. It means a person from amongst you. From amongst you, a person who comes to bring a sacrifice, a korban. So the pasuk implies from someone amongst you, but not all of you. Velo kulchem. So that not everyone is eligible to bringing a korban. Lahotzias ha-mumar, to the exclusion of a mumar, a sinner. The pasuk which had used the word mikem tells us, informs us of the following: bochem chilat bi velo beumos. The concept of making a distinction between sinners and non-sinners with regard to acceptability of their sacrifices is a phenomenon that takes place only amongst the Jewish people, but not beumos. Meaning, and here's a very interesting halacha, we can call it a leniency with regard to Gentiles, where we don't make distinctions amongst Gentiles between sinners and non-sinners, but rather any Gentile that comes with a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, we will accept his sacrifice, not paying any placing any emphasis on his level of righteousness, of observance. The pasuk says, "Min habehema, lahavi b'nei adam shedoimim lebehema." This comes to include people who are like animals. Mikan omru. Based on this, it has been taught. Mekablin korbanos mipoishi Yisrael. We will accept the sacrifices of Jews that are sinners, kidei shiachsu ben b'tshuva, so as to motivate them to return to practice repentance. Chutz min hamumar u'menaseh chesayayin u'mechalal shabosus b'farhesya. This idea of accepting korbanos from sinners is true with a couple of exceptions, with the exception of a mumar. Someone who practices nisuch yayin. Nisuch yayin is a situation where one pours wine in front of an idol, a form of idolatry. And mechal Shabbos v'hesya, someone who violates, who knowingly violates Shabbos in a public form, public violation. As far as this source is concerned, there are numerous questions that need to be clarified with regard to the contents of this source. And the Gemara will do this all before it gets to focusing the question on Rav Onan. Ha gufa kashya. This source is inherently difficult. Amris, you say on the one hand, you say mikem velo kulchem lahotzi es hamumar. So the opening expression or the opening part of this source excludes a mumar. Namely, a mumar's korbanos will not be acceptable. And then it teaches, Mekablin korbanos miposhi Yisrael, we accept these sacrifices from sinners who happen to be Jewish. That would seem to be contradictory. Ha lo kashya. The truth is, it's not. It's not difficult. Reisha, that we exclude the mumar. The mumar lechol haterukula. He is someone who sins with regard, he's an across-the-board sinner. He does not accept any part of the Torah. Mitziyasa, the middle section where we said Mekablin Mipoish Yisrael, that's Mumar Ledover Echad. He happens to have a weak spot with regard to one mitzvah that he knowingly violates. Someone who is a violator of a specific mitzvah, but not all of the Torah. Someone like that, we can accept his korbanos. Amos Seifa. But we go on to analyze the rest of the source, and it had mentioned amongst those that we do not accept sacrifices from them, it said chutz min hamumar u'menaseh chesayayin u'mechalal shabbos b'farhesya. Hi Mumar Hefidomi, the Mumar that we dashed underline here at the end of the source. This Mumar, what is it speaking about? E Mumar Lucholatura Kula, if he is a sinner with regard to all mitzvahs, and it teaches us in the end that we don't accept his korbanos, Hainu Resha. This was already taught in the Resha. We had mentioned in the Resha where the Gzeres HaKosov was Mikem, V'lo Kulchem, L'hoitzi Es HaMumar, we were excluding someone who violates all of the Torah. Why do I have to repeat that at the end of the source? V'i Mumar L'dover Echad, and if you say that the Mumar that's excluded at the end of the source is a Mumar, he's a sinner with regard to one particular mitzvah, well then Kashya Mitzvah, that will run up against what it said in the middle section regarding such an individual, the Poshe Yisrael, which we had previously described as he's a Mumar L'dover Echad, where it said we do accept his sacrifices. Here we're excluding him. So this last phrase is a problem. If it's a reference to he's a Mumar L'chol HaTorah, then it's redundant. It's a repetition of the opening phrase. And if you say it's a Mumar L'dover Echad, it then is contradicting that which it said in the middle section of the source. Em olav hochi komar. Therefore, we must conclude the following. Chutz, that the following, namely the source, is to be read really as follows. Chutz min ha-mumar linaseich es hayayin ulechalal shabosos b'farhesya. We will not accept sacrifices from someone who is a sinner with regard to Nisuch HaYayin. Nisuch HaYayin is a practice of idolatry. We had mentioned this earlier. This is someone who pours wine in honor or in service of idols. And we see from here, Alma Mumer Lavidus Gechavim Havei Mumer L'chol HaTorah Kula. We see from this final phrase that we will not accept the shechita of someone who is a sinner with regard to idolatry, being that he is a sinner with regard to idolatry, he is like someone who sins with regard to the whole Torah, which we said in the Resha, we don't accept korbanos from them. Utiyufta de Rav Onan, Tiyufta, this is a repudiation of Rav Onan. Rav Onan was willing to accept the sacrifice, the slaughtering of a Mumar Lavodis Kechavim, and here the source is saying, a Mumar Lavodis Kechavim, we will not accept his sacrifices. And along with that, we will not accept his slaughtering. The Gemara now asks a question. Once we mentioned korbanos from sinners, we had mentioned, based on the word mikem, we excluded people whose sacrifices we will not accept. The Gemara asks, is this the source for that? Is there not another source for that information? And this also is the beginning of a question that lasts a number of lines. We have indicated this with a long question marking, and you can see the length of the question is accompanied by a, as we said, a long question marking that appears to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You'll notice a kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line. So the Gemara asks, "V'ha mehocha nafka?" Is the idea that we don't accept sacrifices from Mumrin learned from here, namely from Mikem? Mehosam nafka? It is learned from another source where it says Me'am ha'aretz. Prat lemumar, that me'am, the mem is a limitation letter from the population. Me'am ha'aretz, we accept korbanos but not from everybody. Prat lemumar, this excludes the mumar. There is a bracketed section that appears now, and the reason for this is that within the brackets we will be presented with Rav Shimon ben Yossi, who essentially says the same thing. He offers another source for excluding sinners. But for our purposes, the basic question has ended here. Namely, we have a source other than Mikem to exclude a Mumar. And we see that right here at the top line. Me'amarz prat lemumar. So the issue that we have to deal with in a global fashion or in a general fashion is, what do I need two makoros to exclude a mumar for? So that if you skip to the point after the brackets, you'll see the Gemara says, chado v'chatos v'chado v'ola. I need two sources. Each source is excluding different kinds of korbanos that the mumar attempts to bring. One source excludes the chatos offering, the sin offering that a mumar may bring, and the second source will exclude an ola offering that a mumar might want to bring. Within the brackets, as we said, Rav Shimon ben Yossi will present his source for this idea of exclusion of a mumar. So now, that having been said, realizing that the basic question has already been presented, namely a seeming extra source to exclude a mumar, the answer following the bracketed section, let us now read the bracketed section. Rav Shimon ben Yossi Omer, and we should point out that the bracket length indicator appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, where you see a descending vertical dashed dotted line. So, reading the Gemara, Rav Shimon ben Yossi Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yossi, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, says, Asher lo teoseno b'shkoga v'oshem. Hashov miyidiyoso mevi korban al shigigoso. Someone who, upon discovering his mistake, would not do that same thing again, so he brings a korban. That's a person that expresses regret over what he did. Generally speaking, korbanos are brought because someone sinned in an unknowing fashion, in a shogeg fashion. When someone discovers that he has sinned and reacts, oh, I wouldn't have done that had I known, someone like that, we will accept his korban. However, and that's learned from this posuk, Asher lo teoseno b'shgoga. However, eino shov miyidiyoso, someone who upon discovering his mistake would say, I would have done it anyway, eino mevi korban al shigigoso. He will not be, his sacrifice will not be accepted. His a sacrifice from him, even though the sin in question he had done unknowingly, since his reaction or his behavior indicates that he would have done it anyway, we will not accept his sacrifice. The Amrinon Mai Binayu, and we ask, what's the difference between the first approach that said Prat Lumumar and Rav Shimon ben Yossi, who also is excluding a knowing sinner? The Omar Rav Hamluna explains that the point of difference between these two opinions, the first opinion in the Tanaic source that said Mamar's Prat Lumuma and Rav Shimon ben Yossi, the point of difference will be the following. And notice we have a phrase marking around a line of Gemara. That means read it in one shot. So again, from the middle of the line, Mai Bineo, the Omar Rav Hamluna, Mumor lechol chele vehevi korban al hadam iko binayu. The case of a person who was a knowing sinner with regard to chelev. Chelev is a forbidden part of the animal. After slaughtering the animal, there are numerous sections within the animal that have pieces of tissue matter called chelev, and this is tissue matter that's forbidden to eat. People who are expert in dealing with chelev removal know how to remove this from animals so that you can eat the rest of it. If we have someone that knowingly eats chelev, he happened to have consumed animal blood mistakenly, and he wants to bring a sacrifice for the blood that he had eaten mistakenly. Someone like this will be a point of difference between these two opinions. Let us look at Rashi, who elaborates. Rashi, just a little bit down from here. Vehevi korban al hadam sheshogag bo, who had made a mistake with regard to blood consumption. And this very person, had he known that it was blood, he would not have eaten it. Mind you, he's a sinner, with a knowing sinner with regard to chelev. With regard to chelev, he would eat it under all circumstances, because he likes it. But with regard to blood, there he would not have eaten it had he known that it was blood. So, will we accept a korban from him? L'tana kama mumar shmoi. As far as the Tana Kama is concerned, he is called a mumar. He's been labeled a mumar. It's true with regard to chelev, but he has been labeled a mumar, a knowing sinner. V'lo mekablinon mine, and we won't accept a korban from him. Ul Rabbi Shimon, however, according to Rabbi Shimon, who emphasized the issue of would he regret, so shav midiyasuhu bedam. With regard to blood, he is someone that would have not done it had he known. That's called shav, returns midiyasuhu. As a result of knowledge, he would have desisted from what he did. And as a result, umekablinon minei, and therefore, with regard to the blood consumption, we will accept his sacrifice that he's bringing to atone for his having eaten the blood. After all is said and done, we now close the bracketed section. We still have a problem. We have, on the one hand, a pasuk mikem, from which we said prat lemumar, and we have this pasuk quoted at the top of the page, which says me'am oretz, also prat lemumar. What do I need two sources to do seemingly the same thing? So the Gemara answers, and there is a long answer marking that accompanies this piece. That's indicated by the tuf standing for teretz, with a vertical descending dashed line indicating all of the lines of Gemara opposite this form the answer. So the answer is, I need the two sources, chata b'chatos, chata b'ola. One is to exclude the chatos offering brought by a mumar, and the second source is needed to exclude the ola offering brought by a mumar. Utsrichi, and I need to exclude both. Had I had just one, I would not have been able to figure out the other. Di ashminen chatos. Had we taught just that a chatos is not accepted from the mumar, mishum delechaporahu, it's coming to afford atonement. And since the mumar's intent is to continue sinning and repeat his sin, even though maybe now he happened to do it in a shogeg fashion, nevertheless, he is someone that would willingly sin, we cannot accept his sacrifice. A sacrifice is not brought, is not accepted by someone who would willingly sin. Avol, oila d'dorinhu, the ola korban, the nature of it, it's not coming to offer atonement. It's coming as a gift. A gift, so to speak, to the Almighty. Emo lekabel minei. I would have thought, had I just excluded the mumar's chatos, I would have said, let us, yes, accept the ola brought by a mumar. Vi ashmin ola, and had we taught that the ola of a mumar is not acceptable, mishum delav chiyuvahu. The ola is a korban that's not obligatory. We're talking about a personal korban ola. It's brought as a gift, and hence I can see that it would be excluded if brought by the sinner. Rashi says the lav chiyuva, the lav orach aro likbuli dorim minein. It's also not proper etiquette to accept a gift from a sinner. Dichtiv, the pasuk says zevach rishoyim toeva, the sacrifice, the offering of the wicked is abominable. So that's as far as an ola. So had the Torah said an ola from a mumar we will not accept, that I could understand, but I would not have derived a chatos from that. Avol chatos dechiyuvahu, the chatos, which is something obligatory. If a person had sinned, a type of sin that warrants the bringing of a chatos, at the point that he commits the sin, it becomes obligatory. Emor lekabel minei, I would have thought that we should accept the chatos offering from the mumar, because had we not accept, if we wouldn't accept it, you'd have a situation of a sinner that ends up getting rewarded, that we allow him to save the money of bringing such a korban. So as to prevent this phenomenon of a choyte niskar, we say that the chatas we would accept, even though we were taught that an ola you don't accept. Therefore, tzricha, I need to have a second source that would cover the second kind of sacrifice as well. And with this, we exclude an ola and a chatas brought by the mumar. On Amud Aleph, we had made reference to a behemoth. The star that you see to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text with an Omen Aleph indicator will make it easy to find where this quote is coming from, namely by going back, to scroll back or turn back the page to Hey Omen Aleph and scan down the left-hand side of the Gemara text until you get to a star with an Omen Beis indicator, and you will notice this the third wide line of the Gemara, the lower part of the page. On that line, the Gemara had quoted a pasuk min habema, in reference to from whom do we accept sacrifices, and it said there lahavi bnei adam shedoyimim lebehema, to include people who are like animals, and the parallel to animals were people that just like animals have no mitzvah obligations. They behave on based on their natural instincts. So to a person who behaves like that is called a rasha. A human being is different than behemoths insofar as that the Kodesh Baruch Hu created mankind in addition to the animal kingdom, making a major distinction. With regard to mankind, there are natural instincts that people have, and those natural instincts though are restricted on many occasions by the Torah. In other words, a person may experience a feeling of hunger, and as a result of that desire to eat whatever is available, comes the Torah and says, you must curb your natural instincts, and you cannot eat certain things. Certain kinds of animals cannot be eaten. Milk and meat that are cooked or prepared together cannot be eaten. There is the whole vast realm called morality, where there are natural instincts that a person has, and the Torah expects a person to overcome those natural instincts. This has very broad ramifications to many issues that are dealt with on a contemporary basis, where people have all kinds of, let's say, moral deviations, and try to justify those moral deviations by saying, well, he was born that way. No one is denying that. Maybe someone was born with this. Every normal person is born with natural instincts and tendencies to do things that we might classify as immoral, but that's the natural instinct. And we would find it reprehensible if people were to go all the way with their natural instincts. And that's the very point. The Torah is aware of that, and the Torah is promising great reward and pleasure if a person learns through the Torah of how to overcome the natural instincts and tendencies that a person has. As everyone, I'm sure, has experienced at one point or another, when a person had a tendency or a natural desire to do something and overcame it and had a very good feeling that he was able to overcome that which his simple desire was trying to lead him to do. That's an expression of pleasure that one gets from overcoming the natural instinct. So that the individual who lives like a behemoth, he is essentially living by following his natural instincts, and that is what we classify as a rasha, person who is not allowing the Torah to direct one's life. And just to repeat a point, the main point that we made is that the claim that someone was simply born that way, and therefore that's an attempt to legitimize deviant behavior, that cannot be advanced at all, because the entire Torah is dealing with people that are born that way. And Nevertheless, just because a person is born in such a way, just because a person, using one of our previous examples, is born with the instinct that develops hunger when deprived from food, nevertheless, we will not justify eating whatever you like just because you are hungry. Of course you were born to be hungry when deprived from food, but nevertheless that's not justification for eating just whatever you like. So too, with regard to all other areas where a person claims that someone was born that way, it is not a justification for yielding to that particular desire at that given moment. All of this, we said, by way of interpretation or explanation of the term behemoth. So, on Omen Aleph, we saw the word behemoth used to reflect this substandard or negative characteristic. The Gemara now brings this into question. The Cholhecho Dichsi Behemoth Griuso, wherever the Torah uses the word behemoth, does that indicate someone is negative? Griuso meaning something that's deficient, missing. In the Gemara Omed Aleph referred to behemoth as the word behemoth was used to refer to a sinner. But we have other psukim where the word behemoth appears, and it is actually has a positive connotation. As we look ahead in the Gemara, we notice triangles that appear, and in fact in two different directions. Under our Nosei Mivneh heading in the outside margin, you'll see triangles that appear in two directions. Mashmos behemoth bamikra. Here we will be dealing with the seeming different connotations that the word behemoth has by way of the scriptures. So the Gemara asks, you claimed on Omer Aleph that the word behemoth is an indication of something negative, v'hoksiv, but do we not have the following? Adam u'behemoth toshi Hashem. In this pasuk you have the word behemoth, the Omar Rav Yudah Marav, and he interprets this pasuk as follows. Elu b'nei Adam shehin arumin b'das u'mesimim atzmon kebehemoth. The expression arumin b'das has to do with someone that has wisdom. And they are humble. They make themselves like an animal in the sense of humility. So for our purposes, we see this pasuk using the word behemoth, and the word behemoth is actually a reflection of someone who is pious, someone who has wisdom and is humble. The Gemara answers that interpretation is true. However, it doesn't serve as a question on what we said on Amud Aleph, Hasam Ksiv Adam u'behemoth. There, the word behemoth is coupled with the word Adam. Hacha, as far as here in our sukya, meaning on Omed Aleph, where the word behemoth was meant to refer to a rasha, behemoth l'chudei ksiv. The word behemoth appears in isolation. The Gemara asks, now, to the contrary, v'chol hecha dechsiv Adam u'behemoth mal yusei, and wherever you see the word behemoth coupled with Adam, that means that it's a reference to something positive. V'ha ksiv, there is a pasuk in which it says, v'zorati es beis Yisrael, zera Adam, v'zera behemoth. And this pasuk is of a negative nature. And yet, in this pasuk, as you can see, we've dashed underlined the word Adam and behemoth. The word behemoth appears in the context of Adam, and it has a negative connotation. Rashi elaborates a bit more on what is implied, but for our purposes, it refers to something negative. The Gemara answers, nevertheless, it doesn't question the approach we've been taking till now. Hosam haluchudei ha chilke kra zera adam luchud the zera behemoth luchud. Behemoth in this pasuk isn't actually coupled with adam. The word zera isolates each term. There's zera adam, the seed of man, and the zera behemoth, the offspring of animals. And in this pasuk, it does in fact have a negative connotation. Zera behemoth, a reference to people that are like animals, that they are lacking all good. And nevertheless, it doesn't bring into question what we said at the previous point up triangle, Adam u'behemoth toshu Hashem. There, behemoth was coupled with Adam without any intervening expressions. And when you see behemoth on its own, and it's interpreted as referring to a person, there, in fact, it has a negative connotation, as we said on Amud Aleph. You can see that we have a slash mark in the Gemara. That indicates that that which follows is a totally new idea. On the outside margin, under our Nosei heading, the topic heading, we've indicated till Vav Amud Aleph, that means till the next daf, we will be involved with this particular point. And we have noted in our introduction, in the title to this sugya, Psikas Beis Din Shel Rabbi Gamliel, the ruling of the court of Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel, in this particular case, it's a name that appears many times in the Shas, and there were many great Tanoim with that name. Rashi points out that this was Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. In other words, on a Tanaic basis, a rather late individual, a late figure. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi being the editor of the Mishnayos, meaning he came at the end of the Mishnaic of the Tanaic period. Here we're going to be making a reference to his son. So the title to the sugya is Psikas Beis Din Shel Gamliel Le'esor Lahalutin Shchitas Kusi L'Rav Yankov Bar Idi. According to Rav Yankov Bar Idi, Afilu Yisrael Omeid Al Gabov. Rav Yankov Bar Idi will be teaching us that Rabbi Gamliel and his Beis Din forbid the slaughtering of a kusi under all circumstances, even with a Yisrael Omeid Al Gabov. That means even with constant supervision. We ought to point out that we had in our opening Mishnah, it said Hakol Shochtin Ushchitasen Kshera. For those of you who remember the first sugya, we had dealt with the seeming inherent contradiction to the first Mishnah. Hakol Shochtin was Lechatchila, and Shchitasen Kshera was B'di'evet. We had five, six approaches to understanding the Mishnah. One of those approaches was Hakol Shochtin comes to include even a kusi, provided, and we saw like Abaye's interpretation was, provided he is under constant supervision. So that was was one of the pshatim offered to the Mishnah. The Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta. We're now referring to a period later than the Mishnah, and according to Rav Yankov Bar Idi, who presents this particular issue of Rabbi Gamliel Beis Dino, he is telling us that true, the Mishnah made an allowance for a kusi with a Yisrael Omeid Al Gabov. However, there was a later ruling that came to undo the Mishnah's allowance, the Mishnah's, we'll say, leniency. And this later ruling came to forbid the Shchitas Kusi under all circumstances, even if he is doing so with constant supervision. In the course of the Gemara, we will notice that Rabbi Zeira suggests to Rav Yankov Bar Idi that maybe Rabbi Gamliel Beis Dino were not coming to offer some new ruling contrary to the Mishnah, but simply when Rabbi Gamliel Beis Dino said that the Shchitas Kusi is Aser, they were talking about a case where the Kusi is Shechting unsupervised. But if he were supervised, his Shchita would be all right, in accordance with the Mishnah. To this suggestion, Rav Yankov Bar Idi will react in a rather, we'll call it violent reaction, and says that anyone who would suggest that sounds like someone who hasn't learned anything. We will see how this unfolds as we get into the Gemara. Omer Rav Chanan, Omer Rav Yankov Bar Idi, Omer Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, Mishum Bar Kapara. There's a long list of names here, but we are going to refer to, based on what one finds in the Rashi, we'll refer to this as Rav Yankov Bar Idi's teaching, even though the origin of it is really Bar Kapara, who tells us, Rabbi Gamliel Ubeis Din Dino, Rabbi Gamliel and his court, Nimnu Al Shchitas Kusi V'Asrua, they voted on the issue of a kusi doing shchita. We've explained kusi before as a reference to a type of people who converted to Judaism under
questionable circumstances. Without getting into details, because the realm of Kusi, or the discussions that surround Kusi, are numerous in nature. For our purposes, it refers to someone who comes from a people whose original conversion was questionable. So Rav Gamliel Beis Dino came and ruled that their slaughtering, the Kusi slaughtering, is unacceptable. And we are explaining that this ruling was coming to forbid that which the Mishnah would have allowed. The Mishnah may have allowed, under the Hakol Shochtim introduction or opening phrase, to include even a Kusi. They are coming along to say no. Amar Lei Rabbi Zeira, the Rav Yaakov Bar Idi. Rabbi Zeira suggests alternatively that Shema Lo Shoma Rabbi. Rabbi is the teacher. Maybe you, Rav Yaakov Bar Idi, did not receive this tradition. Elo b'she'ein Yisrael omid agabov. This tradition of the Pesach of Rav Gamliel Beis Dino forbidding a kusi. That's only if ein Yisrael omid agabov. If he is slaughtering unsupervised, that would be in effect in accordance with the Mishnah. The Mishnah itself was making an allowance for a kusi only if he was supervised, as we saw in accordance with Abaye's teaching. However, if he's unsupervised, his shechita would not be allowed. Omar Lei, so Rav Yaakov Bar Idi says back to Rebbe Zeira, Domi hai me rabbonon kedelo gmiri inshi shmeitza. Paraphrasing the Gemara, it says, "You give me the impression as one who has never learned." And he goes on to say, we use a phrase marking to read the next five words together. B'she'ein Yisrael omid al gabov lameimra boi, to describe a situation where the kusi is shechting without Yisrael Omegabov, meaning unsupervised, do I need to be taught that is usur? Would we need Bar Kapora to tell us that Rabbi Gamliel and his court voted to forbid an unsupervised kusi? That's so obvious. The Rashi explains why it's so obvious, because the kusi is someone who doesn't accept the principle of lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. It's true that the Torah says lifnei iver lo sitei michshol, and it's true that the kusis are people that supposedly accepted that which is written in the written Torah, in the Torah Shebiksav, and it says lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. The way the term lifnei iver lo sitei michshol is understood is one should not mislead others. The literal translation of that pasuk is that in front of the blind man one should not place a stumbling block. The kusis understand or will accept that pasuk only in its literal form, not to take some type of stumbling block and place it in front of the path of a blind man. However, they don't accept the general flavor or meaning of that pasuk, that means the pasuk that we understand meaning to mislead individuals. Misleading would include serving them or preparing for people food that's unkosher or unacceptable. So Rav Yaakov Bar Idi says it's so obvious, it's well known that kusis don't hold from the idea of lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. So an unsupervised kusi is of course not to be trusted. Therefore, I don't need a ruling of Rav Gamliel Beis Dino to convey that. If they are convening a court to vote on a matter prohibiting Shechitas Kusi, it must be that there's some novel point that even if he is being supervised, we will not accept his Shechita. So Rav Yaakov Bar Idi, in effect, responded to Rabbi Zeira's suggestion, and now the Gemara wants to know, Kibla Mine or Lo Kibla Mine? Did Rabbi Zeira himself accept this response or not? In other words, Rabbi Zeira himself, will he accept that the Shechitas Kusi is forbidden even while supervised by a Yisra, by a Jew?
So this short question of Kiblu Mineh Lo Kiblu Mineh is now followed by a long answer. In other words, we will need to learn all of the Gemara till the fourth line from the top of Daf Vav Amud Aleph in order to come to a conclusion regarding Rabbi Zeira's stance on this matter, namely Kusi with Yisrael Omid Al Gabov on a Halacha Lemaisa level. Right? We say the term Halacha Lemaisa in contrast with the Mishnah's teaching. Many times the Mishnah may teach something, but that teaching is not binding La Halacha, because later in the Gemara redefines things or offers alternative sources for whatever. In this case, the question is once again: did Rabbi Zera accept this point of Rav Idi that Rav Gamliel Ubezino were teaching a prohibition of Kusi Shchita even while supervised? Toshma, and we do have a long answer marking. You can see the tuflets encircled to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara text, followed by a descending vertical dashed line. All of this is needed before we can answer this question regarding Rabbi Zera. The Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Amar Rav Asi, Ani ro'isi es Rabbi Yochanan she'ochal mishchitas kusi. Rav Asi relates that he saw Rabbi Yochanan eating meat slaughtered by a kusi. Af Rabbi Asi ochal mishchitas kusi. Rav Asi himself, not only does he report having seen Rabbi Yochanan, but Rav Asi himself ate from Shechitas Kusi. The Tohi Bo Rabbi Zera, and Rabbi Zera was wondering or was amazed. In this case, we'll have to explain Tohi Bo Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera was wondering, meaning he was in a state of doubt here with regard to what was just reported about Rabbi Yochanan Rav Asi eating from Shechitas Kusi. Two possibilities that arise in his mind. And we've indicated the two possibilities with an Aleph, and the next line you can see a squiggling lined expression, Oy Dilma, or possibly Bay's second possibility. In our marking system, where two alternatives are presented, the expression that indicates alternative, we attempt to squiggle underline. There are many different expressions in the Shas that indicate alternatives, included which you have E Boyasemo or E Nami, and you have O Dilma, all expressing additional possibilities. So, two possibilities regarding Rabbi Yochanan's behavior. Aleph, lo shmia lehu. Maybe he didn't hear of the ruling of Rav Gamliel Beis Dino that forbade the Shechitas Kusi. De'i have shmia lehu, have mekabli lo. Had Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Asi heard that teaching, they would have accepted it and not eaten the Shechitas Kusi, that which they ate. Oy Dilma, Shmia Lehu. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan Rasi heard of the ruling of Rav Gamliel Beis Dino for Lo Kiblu, and they simply rejected it. They never accepted that restrictive ruling. And they ate from Shechitas Kusi because they were basing themselves on the Mishnah, Hakol Shochtem, including a Kusi. This was Rabbi Zera's doubt. What was behind Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Asi? Was it their lack of knowledge of Rabbi Gamliel Ubezino's ruling, or was it their resistance to his ruling? Hadar Poshit Lenafshei. Then Rabbi Zera resolved the matter for himself. In other words, on his own, he resolved. Mistabra, in all likelihood, to Shmia Lehu Velo Kiblua. They, namely Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Asi, were familiar with the ruling, and they simply rejected it. The E Salkadaitoch, if one were to think the following, we notice we have a phrase marking, that means to read the next phrase, the next line together. The E Salkadaitoch, what? That if you were to think, Loi Shmia Lehu, Vihave Shmia Lehu, Have Makabli Law, that they were in the dark, they had not heard the ruling, and had they heard the ruling, they would have practiced otherwise, namely, they would have not eaten what they did. In other words, they stumbled Hechi mistaya milsa lemechal isura. How could it be that things should work out? Mistaya milsa, things should work out that they would eat that which they would otherwise perceive as forbidden. Now we're talking about very righteous men. How could it be that they would stumble in the area of food consumption or forbidden food consumption? Hashta behemten shal tzaddikim min HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevi takol al yodam. We have precedent, and the Gemara in this Masechta will share the stories concerning this matter. There is precedent for even the animals owned by the righteous are spared from stumbling. Tzaddikim atzman lo kol shekein. When it comes to the righteous people themselves, all the more so, the heavenly fate or heavenly destiny would have prevented them from stumbling in matters of eating that which is otherwise forbidden. So as far as Rabbi Zera is concerned, it's clear to him at this point that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Asi, who ate from the Shechitas Kusi, simply rejected Rabban Gamliel Ubezdino's ruling. The E Salka Daitoch, the Gemara now at the top of Vav. Now we're going to come to a head. We're going to come to the main part of the answer regarding Rabbi Zera. The E Salka Daitoch Lo Kibla Minei. If you were to consider or to think that Rabbi Zera did not accept Rav Yankov Bar Idi's interpretation of Rav Gamliel Beis Dino, namely, that as far as Rabbi Zera is concerned, Rav Gamliel Beis Dino simply forbid the Shechitas Kusi when unsupervised, but Shechitas Kusi when supervised would be allowed, if that were Rabbi Zera's opinion, then Lishni Lei, he could have answered for himself when he was confounded by the, or wondering about the Rabbi Yochanan Vasi practice, he could have answered for himself as follows. Kan Kishisrael Omed Al Gabov. Here, where Rabbi Yochanan Ravasi ate, they ate from Shechitas Kusi that was supervised by a Jew. Kan Kishain Yisrael Omed Al Gabov. The Isser of the Beis Din Ramaliel was a case where the Kusi was unsupervised. But Rabbi Zera did not take that approach. Rabbi Zera was rather wondering how in the world could Rabbi Yochanan eat from Shechitas Kusi to begin with. Elolav shmamino kibla mine. From rather, we can conclude with regard to Rabbi Zera that he accepted Rav Yankov Bar Idi's point that Rav Gamliel Ubeis Dino forbade across the boards Shechitas Kusi even when supervised. And with that in mind, Rabbi Zera is approaching the Rabbi Yochanan Rav Asi incident, knowing that there is no allowance at all for Shechitas Kusi in light of the Ramul Beis Dino ruling. And the only other justification for Rabbi Yochanan Rav Asi is that they did not accept Rabbi Gamliel Beis Dino's ruling. But otherwise, as far as Rabbi Gamliel Beis Dino's, the understanding of that ruling is, as Rabbi Yankov Bar Idi pointed out to Rabbi Zera. And Rabbi Zera, as you can see, accepted that understanding. The Gemara that follows will be delving into why did Rav Gamliel Beis Dino issue an across-the-boards prohibition of Shechitas Kusi even when supervised, when in fact the Mishnah previously had made an allowance for supervised Kusi slaughtering. That will be in Mirtz Hashem, the topic of our next shiur. In the meantime, with this, we conclude our shiur for today.